It's Carlo
and Florence from Next Stop Who Knows,
and welcome to the Briffany Early Show.
Briffany, you come all the way from Ireland for this adventure.
Isn't Briffany Early a real tonic, full of positivity?
It's an amazing story, Briffany, with a wonderful, happy ending.
All of those things on your bucket list though, wouldn't necessarily have led you to do the World Cycle Race.
27 countries, 490 days. 18,000 miles on a bike.
You've decided that's it. You're going to keep giving yourself challenges.
Welcome to the second episode in the Briffany Early Show. This week we are joined by not one guest, but two. But kind of two becomes one, kind of. It's a couple. We're joined by Carlo Cortero and Florence Murphy of the well-established blog at this stage, Next Stop Who Knows.
Hi,
welcome to the show, folks.
Thanks for having us.
Great to have you here. I know you've crossed the border from Roscommon into County Leitrim to record today, so
True floods.
I hope you haven't got any like nosebleeds or nothing major. I know there's water up everywhere, but that's kind of coming from Roscommon anyway, so it's your fault.
Of course.
Before we get sidetracked by the weather and all that sort of stuff and local football rivalries, tell us a little bit about yourselves, first of all. You grew up in Roscommon. Tell us about kind of how that worked out for you.
Yeah, I grew up in Boyle, County Roscommon, just down the road, as you said. I went to school in Boyle, and then I went to college in Sligo, where I got a degree in pharmaceutical science. After that, I went to Allergan and Westport to work for a few months. Decided that wasn't the kind of life I wanted to go down. So I came back home, and through a few different projects, I ended up starting up a small poker club in 2006, and I ran that until 2013.
Okay, so 7 years as running a den of iniquity, basically, in the Shannonside region.
Yeah, basically.
But I ne'er do well, as some people would call it. Florence, what's your story?
I'm from Boyle as well, just up the road from Carlo, and I went to school in Boyle. When I left school, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was kind of different from my friends in that they kind of all had a direct passion, whereas I didn't. So I kind of had jobs here and there for a few years, went back to college then and studied childcare, and I worked in a creche for a few years before leaving home.
Okay, so leaving home.
Yes.
Let's talk about that. Carl, you were born in 2013. I'm presuming Florence is the same for yourselves. And you are a couple.
Yes,
yeah,
we've been out for 10 years.
So childhood sweethearts.
If you call 27 then childhood, yeah.
I'm interested to know about where you both were in your lives in terms of a financial situation, in terms of, I suppose, your lives together, and where you wanted to get to from where you were at that point.
Yeah, up until we left in 2013, we always had, from once we started going out 10 years ago, we always had an interest in travel. So we used to go on your typical backpacking holidays. We'd save up money, we'd go on a 3-month trip here or there. We went to Africa in 2009, did volunteer work for 3 months. We went to, you know, Asia in 2011 on a 7-month backpack trip. And in between that, you had your typical 2-3 week adventures here and there. And it was a case of we'd save up money, we'd go away, spend it all, come back home, rinse and repeat. And that's kind of where we were. Our main motivation back then was, you know, make money so we can travel more.
So basically it's poverty at home, and then because you have a limited amount of money, it's poverty when you're away as well, to some extent.
Yeah, of course.
You're not talking about 5-star hotels
not
that you're staying
then.
In.
No.
Oh, I like that cheeky little grin. So, Next Stop Who Knows is, of course, a travel blog, fundamentally, but there's an awful lot of things that have come from that as well. Tell us first about the original blog and how that got started and where you went with it.
So, as I said, when we went to Africa in 2009, we were doing a volunteer trip. So we wanted to blog about it and kind of have a Dear Diary story of it.
Facebook, social media wasn't
big
back then.
But people go for a drink nowadays and they do that on Facebook and social media. So what was different about your one?
We wanted to keep a diary of our travels so our family could get a more in-depth view, because they thought we were crazy. Like, what are you going over to Africa for? Like, you're mad. So we wanted to show them exactly what we were doing on a daily basis and why we were there. So that was the idea behind it.
Yeah, and as I said, it was a Dear Diary. No one apart from her family had any interest in reading it, and even they back then really didn't
get
deep in it.
They just want to know you're alive.
Exactly.
Yes.
And that was basically our way. But it was also, I knew back then that even if nothing came about from the blog, we would always have these memories written down so we could look back on, and that's the value of doing what we did back then.
And when did the nucleus of the idea that maybe you could make a bit of money out of this, or maybe you could actually leverage the blog to get, as you mentioned, 5-star hotels, when did that become a thing?
So in 2013, like you asked, we were both, I was working full-time in a creche, Carlo had his poker company, I was living with my sister, he was living at home. We hadn't actually got a house together, because in the back of our minds we knew that we weren't going to settle in Boyle for 10, 20 years. We didn't want to get a mortgage, and that was always in the back of our minds. So we had planned to actually do a 7-month trip in South America. Like Carlos said, it was going to be a case of saving up all our money, going away, having an unbelievable time, but coming home with no money. And I remember the day I said it, I just felt like it kind of detracted from the whole experience, because I knew we were going to come home a little depressed, wanting to go again, but just not having the funds to do it.
I'm pretty sure I know that feeling.
Yeah, so I guess a lot of people do. So I just turned to Carlo and I said, look, I really want to do this traveling. I want to have these experiences, but I don't want to be coming home with no money and just having this awful feeling of we have to start from the bottom up again. So I said, is there a way that we can make money online?
What you really said, though, was, I'm not going to South America.
Yes, well, that I had to be dramatic. I had to be dramatic.
Okay, so was this an ultimatum? It's me or South America? Or
I had to be dramatic. So I said, I'm not going to South America. And his face dropped. The colour just drained. He said, why? Am I going to be stuck here forever? And I was like, no, I do want to go, but I just want us to be able to make money while we're there, and maybe even stay longer. So then he perked up a little bit.
So you were the sensible one in this relationship.
Of course.
Carlo was just along for the ride.
The dreamer. I'm the dreamer.
Okay.
Carlo
she's the doer.
Was like, day to day, we're grand, we're fine. I was like, no, I'm thinking 5 years down the line here. I want to be able to have money to do it.
Okay, so how did you take the dream of, let's just travel semi-permanently, more or less permanently, for the last 2.5 years. How did you take that dream and actually make it a reality? What was the key decision that you made along that path?
When Flora said that in 2012, it was mid-2012, I then kind of said to myself, well, look, I've always wanted to work online. I've always wanted to have this, being able to bring a laptop, have a Wi-Fi connection, and make money.
Only since you started traveling. It wasn't necessarily all the time you felt like that.
No, definitely not. But it was just something that I wanted to do. But what was the question there about, did you want to go?
What was the main decision and the key moment, I suppose, that you felt, okay, actually, here's what the plan is going to be, and here's how we can actually make it happen. When and where and what was that decision?
Like, from the content business, it would have been...
Where did it start?
Yeah.
You know, where,
with the nucleus of that idea. Where
that was back in...
So getting your first gig.
That was in late 2012. I started applying.
I know this, so for the benefit of the listeners,
right,
your main business and where you generate most of your income is actually from a content service, an agency.
Yeah,
you hire writers to write for your clients who are blogs, other online outlets.
Yeah.
So where did the nucleus of that idea come from?
It was basically I wanted to find a way of making money, trying to get something that we could do on the road, no matter where we are. I did a lot of research into different potential business models. Freelance writing was one that stood out a mile as a low barrier of entry.
You need to be able to put words on screen. That's pretty much the only... And use email.
Yes, of course. The other side of the equation is, and I've said this a lot, is I wouldn't classify myself as a good writer.
Well, and again, I have to correct my own. I'm being a bit facetious there in terms of there's a difference between putting words on screen and putting good words on the screen.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
And then getting paid to put words on a screen is a
okay.
totally different category again. Mm-hmm. But you've managed to do that. Not just for yourselves, but for 40 writers?
We at the moment, we have a panel of 40 writers that we've built up through, like, we have some writers that are with us from the very start, three in particular. as it's evolved, we've taken on more writers, we've let others go. Again, if the writers aren't happy, it's the same thing, you know, they wouldn't stay on if they weren't happy, or we wouldn't keep them if we weren't happy with what they were providing. So it's kind of like a happy medium between the two of us. So we've let some go, we've taken on more, and at this present time, yeah, we have I think it's 41 writers.
Okay, so you brought us up to 2012 where you decided it's this or that. I'm not going to do it the way we were going to plan to do it. Actually, when you went on the road in 2013, what did you spend that year doing?
So I continued at work because
someone
has to pay the bills. So I stayed at work and I kind of said to Carla, look, take the time, research, kind of find your feet, because we didn't really have an idea of how you could actually make money online. We knew it was possible, but not what we could do, because we're not graphic designers. We don't have them kind of skills. So what could we do to make a good living online? So when Carlo found the freelance writing, he decided to give it a go, took small steps, got a few clients on board through email. And basically, he spent that year building up a couple of clients, and he was doing all the writing himself. So that's where we started off at the beginning, getting $10 an article. But I remember I was at work one day and he had just got a good gig for €300. And
I think I've heard the story.
He texted me around lunchtime and he said, what are you doing? And I said, oh, I'm just after, gave him a list of 50 things I did that morning at work. And he said, oh, well, I just made €300. I was like, okay, this is going to work. We're going to do this. So then I think after that, we kind of knew it was going to work. We just had to scale things up bigger. So then he got me on board and showed me the ins and outs dealing with clients.
I want to know what was going through your head. Okay, you've seen him make €300 once.
Yeah.
But as anybody, and you have a poker background, Carlo,
yeah,
so you know that everyone can get a score once. It's doing it consistently and doing it regularly enough, big enough, that you can pay the bills at the end of the month with no concerns.
Yeah.
What was going through your mind, Florence, in particular? Because I think Carlo always had a bit of a dreamer, and it'll happen. I know Carlo for years, and that's kind of how I've always known him. So you're the pragmatic one in this relationship. So you're the one that said, no, hang on, we need to be able to pay for X, Y, and Z. So when did you get on board, and what was in your mind, like, when you handed in your notice from work and you booked the plane tickets, was there still worries in your head?
I guess there was, because up until then I knew I would have my paycheck at the end of every week, and even though it wasn't going to change massively in the amount I was getting, it was guaranteed. But I think when Carlo texted me that morning and said that he had made €300, I knew it was possible, and I knew that he's determined enough to pack that bag and get on the road, that it wasn't going to be a once-off thing. If he can make that morning, well, then we can both scale things up even more.
And the reality is, some of the places you've lived over the last 2.5 years, because I've really enjoyed following your travels from Thailand through Southeast Asia, India, South America, Brazil. I know Spain was on the list as well at some point. It's been a phenomenal journey that you've been on over the last, whatever,
two and a half years,
30 months or so. €300, even if you only got that once a week, in some of those countries you could live like a king for a month on that.
And briefly, that was always in the back of my mind as well. I kind of, our aim was, starting off was to make €1,500 a month, because we knew that we could live
somewhere like India,
or
Thailand,
or
Malaysia.
Thailand. On that.
Well, India's cheaper again.
Yeah.
But Thailand, I don't know how, if you'd want to be based in India, power cuts and internet shortages might be a bit of an issue, but Thailand is definitely more reliable for that sort of stuff in terms of being accessible all of the time, pretty much wherever you go. It's a very brave step, and I suppose what I want to get out of you over the next 20 minutes or half hour while we have you here is someone who's listening to this podcast who might be in that place you were in, maybe coming up to that middle of 2012. You're stuck in a rut, you really want to see a bit more of the world, you feel like you've maybe not quite achieved what you wanted to when you left school or when you left college, and now you might be mid-20s, late-20s, kind of going, I'm not really sure I'm doing what I want to do with my life. I had all these dreams and I've done none of them. And now, I suppose the three of us are kind of living proof that it's never too late. I was in my 30s when I started chasing my dreams, 30s, 20s as well. So it's very possible to go and do it, but I want you to give me three pieces of advice, in as much detail as you can give me, in terms of where people can go and how to maybe make that decision, or should they make that decision?
Yeah, I think the biggest piece of advice would be, I think coming from a poker background as well, for me, was I had to be all in with this decision to move away. You have to, or not even to move away, but to take that next step. You can't just do it like 50%. I think you have to do something like this 100%. You have to be committed to say, okay, I want to make this work. It's not going to happen in 1 or 2 months, maybe not even in a year. But if you throw enough mud and you kind of build on things and you take it baby steps, you can eventually get there. I mean, it's not rocket science what we do. And most internet business models, it's not rocket science, unless you're doing coding. That's rocket science to me. But
not to me. That's my
background. Yeah. Of course. So,
ABC.
I think that would be the first bit of advice I would give, is like, prepare to be in it for the long term. Not just look for the quick kills, because most people that are making the transition or even thinking about making the transition from real life to online, if you like, has to be quick. And if it's not quick, I give up.
Yeah, they're expecting to replace their bricks and mortar paycheck with the same on an online stream. And that's just not really practical.
Not at all. And I mean, in most cases,
you're very lucky.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I mean, and that doesn't happen too often, as everyone knows. I mean, unless you do, as you said, you strike it lucky, maybe you develop an app and it goes viral or something.
Well,
like
for every one Crystal Swing, for example.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know why I'm comparing Crystal Swing. But for every one a hit like that, and I use hit very loosely there, but for every one kind of that makes an impact like that, there's thousands who don't.
Yeah, and I think the ones that maybe fail is that they either have unrealistic expectations in a short time frame.
And we've seen that, like, living in Thailand, in Chiang Mai, is kind of a hub where digital nomads come to stay. And we've met so many people that just come with unrealistic goals, that they think they're going to write an ebook and that's them set for life. But they can do nothing but fail, because, as you said, only one is a hit and there's 1,000 others that don't get there. So I think it's just to set realistic expectations for yourself and take baby steps and get there.
Exactly. Like, as far as said there earlier, we had a goal of making 1,500 a month, because we knew that would basically be enough for us to survive in somewhere like Thailand. After we achieved that, our next goal was to hit 4K a month. When we did that, then we aimed for the 10K. So it's like building.
I presume we're talking euros here or dollars.
Yeah, euros.
Yeah.
€8.
It's effectively the same thing at the moment.
It is.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we had them kind of baby steps, and you know, and we had a plan to go from step one to step two, and we knew that if we put in the time and the effort that it took.
Well, I'm interested in what the plan is, because I think 1,500 euros, knowing the little bit I know about that kind of blogging world, I think 1,500 euros is pretty achievable if you work full time at it.
Yeah.
But to go from that to basically trebling it to 4,000, what were the major points that you wanted to get through that? And I'm very aware this is only the first of the suggestions you're going to make to me of the three that you're going to give, but just on a tangent to it, what are the main, I suppose, action points that you would have had to get yourself from that 1,500 to that 4,000?
The first part of the equation would have been our freelance team of writers, because we couldn't take on more writing than we were doing. So, and both of us back then were doing the writing as well as a few writers we had. And then we figured, okay, we can scale this up a little bit more if we get more writers on board. So that was the big equation, was, okay, how do we go about finding reliable writers that are happy to work for us and that we're happy and we're happy with their work. So that in itself was kind of like the first hurdle. So we had gone to the likes of Odesk, Elance back then, freelancer.com, and you know, and still to that day, still today, it's still a headache of, you know, managing writers, because when you have a pool of them that big, you know, there's a lot of different logistics that's going in, like some of them aren't available, others are whatever. So managing a team of writers was the main kind of stepping stone.
Yeah, I think making that decision to not write ourselves, to cut back, because we were doing like 10 hours a day writing articles ourselves, and it was brilliant. We were making money, but we weren't progressing, as you said. So once we made that decision to cut back on the writing ourselves and focus more on getting a team together that would replace us and probably write better than us, it was a no-brainer.
Did you make a definite decision to go quality over quantity?
Yes.
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 How important was that?
super.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, you know, because there's so much content out there these days, and there's so much content being written. And our clients know that when we give them something back, they don't really need to prove it, that we've done that on our end. That it's like, they just know, okay, you're going to get the odd mistakes here and there. That's just human error. But they know that they're getting a quality product. And as a result, they've upped the amount of quantity they've been giving us, because they know, okay, we can handle 10 articles a week. You know, we can handle 20, 30.
Because in effect, you've got 4 or 5 people write 2 or 3 each.
Of course. Yeah, exactly. So they, you know, and they know that we're kind of a one-stop solution for their content needs. They'll say, okay, we give these guys everything we have, and we get it back in whenever the deadlines are met. And it's, you know, we're a solution for their problem. And in down the line, our writers are a solution for our problem.
Okay. So your first suggestion was be all in.
Yeah.
What's your second suggestion?
Again,
going back to that person in 2012 in terms of making that decision.
I think it would be, for me as well, another big point is, and I made it from the start, is, you know, everything nowadays is like social media and that. So you've got to build relationships, okay? If you're a nobody with, you know, no picture to your name and your contact and companies, they're not going to want to know you. They want to know a real person. And I think for me, saying at the start, okay, I'm going to build relationships, it has been a big difference, because not only now do we talk business when we're emailing, we're talking about the football at the weekend, or where are we living now, what countries are we in, what did you do at the weekend, because they're interested in our lifestyle as well. And, you know, as I say to a lot of people, if you're outsourcing work to someone, are you going to give it to someone you like or someone you don't like? Of course, you're going to give it to someone else.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's how the world works.
Yeah,
that's exactly it.
And I think building relationships goes across the board. It means just getting yourself out there, joining groups on Facebook, getting into these forums, and just putting your name out there so that when you connect with people, it's all a ripple effect. I mean, someone might say, "Oh, Carlo, I know Carlo does freelance writing. I have a gig. I'll pass it on to
exactly.
him."
Well, it's crazy, because when I came home, I met people at the first few events I went to, whatever. I met people who've been following my blog the whole way along. And it was kind of interesting, because it was kind of cool that people would come up and say, "Oh, hi, Breffni, how are you?"
Yeah.
I had no idea who they were.
Yeah.
And how would I? Do you know what I mean? I'd never met them.
You're not expected.
So they would know everything about me. But when people started telling me backstories that I couldn't remember,
From my own trip. Exactly.
And then when they're talking, "Oh, that time when you did that, or you met this person, or this person said that to you," and I'm like, "I have no idea what you're talking about."
Yeah.
And then they go, "Oh, no, you were in this city," and then it kind of starts coming back, and they're right, they're absolutely spot on. And I'm like, "Man, you remember that better than I did."
Yeah.
I'm guessing you've had tons of those experiences.
Of course, yeah, exactly. And as you said, it's because something stuck, or that memory stuck for that person, that they were like, "Oh, that was cool." Like, you know, and when I see right for whatever, I'm going to say that to them, because that was something that was interested for them in your story, or, you know. So yeah, we get that a lot as well. People that are fascinated about a certain country we've been in, or, you know, for example, when we were in India, we went to a rat temple in northern India. That houses.
I need to know more about that.
Yeah,
I don't want to go there.
Yeah,
but I need to know more about it.
What
in God's name is a rat temple?
So in northern India,
it's like Splinter and the Turtles.
Pretty close.
Yeah,
really.
It's a place called Bikaner in northern India. It's in the state of Rajasthan.
Okay.
And
West India.
Yeah, West India.
Yeah.
And they worship rats. So
their belief is that their rats are their ancestors who have come back to bless them.
Wow.
So basically there's one temple and it houses 20,000 rats, and they feed them, they worship them, and there's just rats everywhere.
Oh God. Is it like cows everywhere else? Or it's worse?
It's worse. It's worse. They let them run up their arms, eat their food if they're eating naan bread or whatever. The rats eat before they eat.
The locals bless themselves. Like, there's a big bowl with milk and bread, and like you have 40 or 50 rats around this bowl eating from it and are drinking from it. As people come in, they put in their fingers and hold it over their mouth and let the milk drip into their mouth as a way of blessing themselves,
check it out on YouTube.
I'm
going
to ask a question, and I want you to be 100% honest with me. Did you do that custom where you dropped the rat milk into okay, you can stay. I was going to have to ask you to leave the room.
We're adventurous, but not
that.
Yeah,
adventurous. There are lines.
There are lines.
Okay, so the two suggestions you've had for us so far for the budding potential online entrepreneur is be all in and develop the relationships. What's the third one? Florence, that come to mind? Carlos had the first two. What was it for you?
I guess for me, it'd be more of a personal thing to find your reasons why. Why do you want this? For me, I was working 9 to 5. Like, I loved my job. I wasn't one of these people that were...
Are you only saying that in case you're...
No, I have to come back at some stage. But no, I genuinely did. But I needed to find my reason why. And for me, it was, did I want to spend the next 20 years doing what I was doing? And the answer to that question was no. I loved it, but did I want to spend my life doing it? No. And I guess once I had that answer and combined with everything else, I had my reason why. So I just wanted to make that happen. I didn't want to be that person that was 60 years old looking back saying, well, I should have did it back then when I had the health to do it, or I wish I did it back then, or I wasted my time. I guess as well with the recession, so many people had just traumatic stories of losing everything, and they'd worked, we know one man who'd worked 40 years in the bank and he didn't even get a going away due when he retired. And he had given everything to his job but got nothing in return. Yes, he had a house and probably a good pension, but nothing else. And I just thought, I don't want to be that person that when I'm 60 feeling that way.
Okay, but on that score, with some places you've travelled to, having a house and an income is a luxury that a lot of people in some of those countries you have don't have and never will have.
Yeah.
And their kids and their grandkids will probably never have. Like the poverty, particularly you mentioned India, and I know we joked about the rats, but they're almost like, the people are almost like rats in some respects in terms of how they cluster around. I don't know how you've experienced it,
yeah.
But as I passed through, anytime I stopped, I was surrounded by 40 or 50 people wanting to know who I was and why I was in their town.
Yeah.
And I think every single white person, particularly outside of the main population centres, gets that. If you go off the beaten track at all, they've probably never seen a white person.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Yeah,
and no prospect. Well, the one thing that struck me about India was the... I don't know if I'm going off on a tangent, but the one thing that struck me about India was that when you go into a town, you'd ask for directions. And if it wasn't in their specific area, they didn't know because they'd probably
never
gone there.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's true.
Like the town 3 or 4 miles down the road, they had just never been there.
Yes.
The opportunities that we take 100% for granted,
yes,
just never materialize in some of those countries.
That's true. No, that's
so in some respects, we don't know how lucky we have it in this
exactly
country.
Yeah.
You know?
And I guess that's it. Like, don't get me wrong, to have a big house, to have food on the table, like, it's a blessing in the sense that, as you said, so many people in the world don't have that. And choosing that life is no problem. You know, getting a mortgage, having a lovely car, having designer clothes. Some people love that. And, you know, I would have loved that so many years ago. But I think just making that decision that I didn't want that.
I still wanted a little bit.
Michael Kors handbag at Christmas, but it won't fit in the backpack. I just wanted to have experiences more so than...
It might draw you home if you've got the Michael Kors handbag in the...
That's why I don't want to have it.
Oh.
I'm never going to get one.
No, I'm the same. Like, I mean, I'm at the age where all my friends are married, they have mortgages, they have kids now, and I'm the kind of one of the Lone Rangers. And, you know, it's something that I don't want at the moment.
Lone Rangers, huh? Florence, you don't take issue with that, no?
As in,
I'm
in the group. But, I mean, I do want a few things. And as Flora said, we're making experiences now when we can do these things. And
I eventually do want a big house, and I do want to have that lifestyle. But just somewhere that we're happy and I can look back and say, well, my 20s was spent trekking to Machu Picchu or going to the Taj Mahal in India and not just sitting in an office or doing my 9 to 5.
You might end up back in Boyle in 5 or 10 years' time or any other Irish town, but you might end up back in the bosom of your own families, but having had a very different experience to everybody around you. I've probably been a totally different person to that person in 2013
that's
who got on the plane.
Yeah,
that's exactly it.
And you know, I think with the mentality we left with was, if it fails, at least we tried.
Yeah.
I mean, we can come home again, we can live with our parents, our family until we get back on our feet. We can start from the ground up, get a job. It's not the end of the world.
The thing is, like, we knew when we were going on 2013 that, you know, there's a risk involved with anything like that. And we knew if we fall flat on our face and we fail, so what? We tried it. It was something we wanted to do. And, you know, having the kind of courage to do that is what I look back on and say, well, I'm glad I did, regardless of how it fares out in the next 5, 10 years or whatever.
How big was your safety net? How much cash did you have in your back pocket or your bank accounts when you went to it? I know you're very, and I'm asking you a very personal question in some respects, but I know you're very open and honest about your finances, both as a business and individually, through your blog and through your email list, which is riveting for anyone who hasn't signed up. Go check it out. Next up, who knows, .com. Isn't it?
Yeah, nextupwhoknows.com.
Nextupwhoknows.com, and check out their email list, and they will actually send you their monthly incomes and outcomes from the business.
Yeah.
So you can actually get a good idea of how this works for yourself and see actual hard, cold facts about what you're taking in and how you're living and how you're funding it.
Yeah.
So the question I have is, when you started 2.5 years ago, how big was your safety net?
We had a combined total of 20,000 euro.
That's a pretty big safety net.
It's a pretty big safety net, but we didn't have that at the start. We made that conscious decision to save for an entire year.
Yeah.
We didn't go out socializing with friends.
Oh, no, that,
we
that
saved
was,
everything.
No, obviously, because it's a deposit on a house is what
of
most
course,
couples your age in this part of the world think. I have 20,000 euros in the bank. If we borrow 10, we've got a deposit for the house.
Yeah.
So you chose to spend it in a different way, and you've kind of you've grown it.
Yeah.
I suppose. Well, I don't know whether you've actually physically grown that stash, but you've developed an income from that concept.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But did we need that much money?
No, not at all. Oh no, that was our personal. We know guys that have come over to us in Chiang Mai. Couples have come over to us in Chiang Mai when we were there just recently at the start of the year for a few months, and they came with $1,000 in their back pocket, with the intentions of grinding it out and making it work. And they're still living in Thailand. So they're making it work.
Do you need that little bit of a safety net though? Like, if you go back to your situation, if you had $1,000 between you, would you have made it as successful as you are?
Well, with the clients we had built up when we left, we would have been okay, because we had built up a kind of a base of clients, so that if we had only $1,000 in our back pocket leaving, we had still clients giving us content that we were able to write and make money from. But the reason why we wanted that safety kind of net is, you know, we didn't know how it was going to fare out. We didn't know if 5 months down the line, the whole content thing was going to be wiped clean and that we were left with nothing. So we wanted that buffer, if you like, to figure out, okay, we have potentially 20 grand here to maybe invest in an online business, or, you know, put towards another online business that
investing wasn't our goal.
But I'm just saying, if things didn't work out the way they have worked out for us, we would have had 20,000 to maybe do something with that would give us some leverage to, you know, not have to go back
with. There's not too many couples in their 20s, 30s that would have that kind of a pool of money. And I suppose it must take a huge commitment to give up the socializing, to give up the few drinks with the lads, to
definitely
the girly days out, whatever it is. I'm being very stereotypical here, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
To give that up for 12 months with this in mind. And I think, well, I'm delighted to see that the results in, I know two of your goals for last year were, one, to have a month where your income was greater than 10,000 euros, and you ticked that off the list, I think, in August last year.
That's right, we had the first one.
By November, your second goal of 100,000 in the year cleared. Like, that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
But we're not dealing in astronomical money either. We're not talking millions here. We're not even talking quarters of millions.
Exactly.
We're talking about achievable targets.
Exactly.
Good salaries by Irish standards,
and
you're living in some of the most exotic places, which tend to be slightly cheaper.
Exactly.
So your standard of living is just as high in some respects, probably even higher, because the weather is just probably out of this
and
world.
Leeches.
Yeah, exactly. And the food is probably just as good as anywhere else. But the cost of living is probably slightly lower in most of the places you live. So the money you're making, which will be a good standard of living here, goes so much further over there.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why, you know, when people are, you know, maybe thinking, I want to go away and make money, you know, they don't need a ton of money. They just need to have enough that will get them doing what they want to do, whether that's, you know, relaxing by the beach, doing a few hours online, whatever it is. As far as Sybil and her tip was, you have to figure out what you want from this, and you have to think hard, because what's the end kind of game, or what's the 1 year, 2 year goal that you have in mind?
I guess there's, what I want to say is just there's no point in obviously being silly about it. I mean, you can't just pack a bag and leave home with 100 euro in your back pocket and say,
some people do,
but I
yeah,
mean,
but again, they're the one in a million.
Yeah.
Yes.
Most of those people make a call a week later. Mommy, daddy,
yeah.
Can
no,
you send me
happens.
Money for an airline ticket home, please?
Yeah.
But can you just tell me when to be at the airport?
Yeah.
That's much more realistic in that situation.
Yeah.
I think 100 euros is completely out the wall.
Mm.
1,000 euros to me sounds like very small.
Yeah,
it does.
20,000 sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
I would have thought somewhere in $3,000 to $5,000,
yeah,
euros, £2,000, that kind of range is probably somewhere around what's manageable to get together relatively easily for most people who are working.
Exactly.
And
it's enough to make a good go of it. You can.
You've got a bit of a buffer.
Yes, exactly.
Also, just so like, you know, when we say we saved up all that money, we did, but we also, if you rewind back to 2011, we went to Asia for a 7-month backpacking trip, and after 3 months, I did my back in. We were forced to come back home. So we had a big budget for going for that 7 months. We had more or less over half of it left. So that was a buffer to start off our savings as well. So we had that kind of little buffer when we were coming back saying, okay, 2 years from now, we hope to, you know,
yeah,
make the plunge.
And it was a vision. It wasn't a case of, you know, it was, as you said, long term. We
long-term
wanted it and it wasn't just...
And I mean, there's, you have to, as Farah said, you put in a lot of sacrifices and you miss out on a lot of things. And,
like,
you know,
a Coors handbag.
Okay, now, I have a question for you. I'm going to play devil's advocate for a couple of minutes.
Okay.
Someone's listening to this show. They have a couple of kids. They've got a mortgage. Is your lifestyle possible?
Absolutely.
How? Because I think that's the nucleus to this. Is if someone's sitting there going, and I'm thinking of people in my own life, friends, family, who would love to do something like this, even maybe on a truncated version,
mm-hmm,
not maybe full time, but maybe
yeah,
for 3 or 4 months, maybe when the kids are off school for the summer.
Exactly.
Let's go 3 months traveling. But they may have a kind of a part-time job or a full-time job that doesn't pay that much.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the kids, they've got other commitments. How do you make it happen in those circumstances?
Well, I think the first thing to realize is that because of our lifestyle, we're traveling, we're going here, we're moving there, this business does not, you don't need to do that, obviously. If you want to, like we do, yes, it's mobile. If you don't want to, of course, you can stay at home with, you know, you have your kids, you have your mortgage, you can do this part-time, as you said. We have a few of our riders that are in exactly that situation that you mentioned. They have kids, they have a mortgage, they're living at home, they do a few hours in the evening, or maybe they work hard at the weekend with the writing. They take on as much as they feel they would like to do, that would maybe save up for a holiday with the family in a couple of months in the summer. So we have plenty of, we have at least 5 of our writers that are in that position, both male and female. So they take it upon themselves to decide how many hours they would like to do. They know the work is consistent from us, so they can plan around that. If they don't want to take on work some weeks, they let us know the week before, it's no problem. So it's a very manageable situation.
That's in respect to the working online.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
As regards the traveling lifestyle, if you have a mortgage and kids, yeah, it's going to be a bit more difficult, but it's not impossible.
Not impossible.
We've met like such inspirational people, families who have a mortgage on their home, they've rented it out, and they
have Airbnb.
Or even have long-term tenants, and they take everything mobile, and they just, their view was, for the most part, was that they want their kids to have experiences, so they homeschool them, they do all that kind of stuff, just to make this dream possible.
Yeah,
I think the people I had in the back of my mind, I'd be worried for the kids if they were to homeschool them. Patience might not be top of the agenda. But no, it is a dream for most people, and it's fantastic that you've made a real go of it. I think it's an absolute credit to yourselves and the work that you've done over the last few years. What have been the highlights for you?
Of the last 2.5 years?
Yeah.
I think for me, I've said it before as well, being in Rio for the World Cup, for the 6 weeks of the World Cup.
Okay, actually, yeah, I need to talk to you. Okay. This is bringing back memories for me now, right? Because I had hoped to be in Brazil. Didn't quite materialise that way. I ended up being in Thailand,
yeah,
watching on Thai and Malaysian TV, which in itself is an experience.
Of course.
Yeah, it could be worse.
Well,
yeah,
no, I'm not sure it could be worse. It gives you a whole new insight into how good British and Irish television is when it comes to sports. But I remember at the time, now correct me if I'm wrong, and you probably will, but did you get a free accommodation right beside the Maracanã Stadium?
Okay, so we got contacted through a guy we're friends with online that was friends with a guy, a real estate agent, basically.
This is coming
this
back
is
to the relationships. Exactly.
Yeah.
Of course, it all comes back. And he was based in Rio, this guy, and he contacted us and says, listen, I know you do some kind of promotions through your blog and stuff. He goes, we have a guest house that's open 10-minute walk from the Maracanã Stadium. They're newly opened. They have no idea of how to do things online. They don't even know how to do email. So we were like, well, you know, we could help them out in that, because at that time this was like 2 months before going to South America. We still had no accommodation sorted for Brazil in Rio in the World Cup.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you've got new apartments in Brazil, South America.
Yeah.
How can you need help to sell those? Like, it just seems crazy to me.
It does. And I mean, we thought, okay, there must be something up here because, you know, why
it's
couldn't...
It's dodgy,
yeah. But as you know, Brazil is pretty corrupt. So they couldn't put up signs outside their guest house. You had to pay a huge fee to the local police and all this. We found out after. So the guy came to us and says, I can cut you a deal where I can get you to stay in the guest house for the duration you're in Rio, whatever that is. And in return, you help these guys out with some social media, get them set up on Hostel World, try and get a few guests staying in the hostel when you're there. You know, basically just kind of help these guys on and you know, see what you can do. So this was a no-brainer for us because they're charging $85 per person per night during the World Cup.
And you stayed for 6 weeks?
So we stayed for 6 weeks, so that works out to over $7,500, I think.
I'm pretty sure they could hire someone who would set them up with accounts on Hostel World.
Of course.
For
I mean,
considerably less than $7,500.
Now, at the end of the 6 weeks, we ended up becoming very good friends with the family, you know, that were there, and they looked after us and they did all this, whatever, brought us here, there and everywhere, showed us the local culture. So we were just, you know, more than happy with the arrangement. We also got to live for free in Rio for 6 weeks during the World Cup, which, you know, is an experience in itself. Like, just being able to be there without having to worry about paying humongous money for that privilege.
It makes a huge difference. My experience in New Zealand would have been slightly similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
The response from the Irish community, the response from Facebook, friends and family, former co-workers who are now living in New Zealand. I was in New Zealand, I think, 6 weeks, just shy of 6 weeks, and I paid for 3 nights accommodation.
Exactly.
And it, from a financial point of view, it takes that onus completely off you.
Yeah.
I know you have an ebook about how to wrangle yourself, and it's just a play-by-play strategy as to how to get complimentary rooms, not underhanded, but how to genuinely offer something in return, which is very important.
Relationship. Yeah.
You're looking for complimentary stays, but you're also providing some value to the hotel or the guest house or wherever you're staying. You know, you're giving them, you know, exposure through your social media channels that will hopefully, you know, bring attention to their and in most cases, all these hotels have budgets built into their yearly budget for exactly these kind of comp stays. So they're looking for, you know, links on websites that are getting engagement from readers and, you know, different demographics. So they're getting something from the equation. We're getting, you know, a couple of free nights. And at the end of it, all they have to do is change the sheets and they're, you know, we're...
And our readers as well.
They're
getting value in the sense that, as your listeners probably know, travel blogs are huge now because people want a more personal view of hotels and places, and they want to hear people's experiences of being there.
Yeah.
So that's like where people like us come in, where we can tell them, okay, this was our experience. This is the best room, and it's an honest review. I think
but they trust you as well.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You've built up a reputation that you've said when stuff is good, and you've said when stuff is bad, and then they might have come along and seen themselves that it was good or bad, and then they trust everything you say. But, well, not everything you say.
Yeah, exactly.
But that you build up a certain credibility with them.
Yeah. And there was one occasion in Asunción, Paraguay, where we went to a hotel.
I love the way you're just name dropping random cities around the world.
You've probably been there.
No, I haven't been to South America yet. South America's on the hit list.
And where we were going for a one night stay. And when we got to the hotel, like, it was really run down and shabby. We made the decision, you know what, we won't do a review on this because it wouldn't highlight a hotel in a, you know, we do like to do an honest review.
Yeah.
So we said, you know what, we were just not going to stay here. We went somewhere else because we felt we couldn't do an honest review, and you know, we basically cut the hotel in two. It wouldn't be any value to them.
Yeah.
It
so
it wouldn't be any value.
That's very fair, because a lot of people would just, for convenience, take the easy accommodation that's sorted,
yeah,
and then slate them the following day or two as they're after they've left and there's no,
yeah,
comeback.
You know, there has been occasions where we've stayed and there's been one or two things that have been like really weird, and we are.
What's the weirdest thing you've seen?
Well, like, I mean, a really, really dirty room the second day we stayed there, and they moved us to a different room than the one we were in.
Did you get the rooms in Thailand where you go into stay in these little motels and they just have condoms on the side dresser?
We stayed in a few places.
Yes,
like that.
But not Comstead.
No,
yeah.
This is when we were paid.
This is just like, you know, when you get off the bus after a 20-hour bus journey,
and the only place to stay is covered in.
Well, we stayed in,
pictures
I think,
of naked women, and
I think we actually stayed in, again, when we landed in Sisian, we stayed in
a brothel.
I think it was basically a hotel brothel.
And was that what between when you needed to make the money up for to pay the bills for the next week, was it?
It was.
How did that go for you? How was business?
it was.
Did you make more money than Florence Carlo? That's what you all.
I think I'll stick
know.
To the content, right?
Okay. wasn't a pleasant experience.
No, but it was just one of them. We were after hopping off the bus for 24 hours, and it was 3 a.m. in the morning. We were kind of, you know, disorientated, and we saw this place. We went across, so we were just wrecked tired, and we went up, and I was like, yeah, this is definitely not just a standard hotel.
Yeah.
But it had Wi-Fi.
It had Wi-Fi, and that's all that mattered.
I'm pretty sure if I'm staying in a brothel, the Wi-Fi is the least of my concerns.
I'm more
worried about someone coming knocking on the door in the middle of the night going, will you let me in? No, I'm good, thanks. Okay, I'll pass now. I didn't have that experience, although I did have a few hairy ones.
Mm.
I want to know what the three mistakes that you've made that if you're going back again, you wouldn't do. Maybe ones that cost you money or cost you time or just caused you inconvenience. What were the three pitfalls that you'd like to have avoided?
I think it would be choosing the riders. Again, it comes back to, this is a pretty big one, because at the start, when we made that decision to scale our business and you know, outsource everything, it's a headache trying to find riders, and we ended up going with riders initially that were, you know, non-native English speakers.
Because they were cheaper.
Of course they were, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And we were kind of experimenting with our profit margins, and we were seeing, you know, would we do, you know, quantity over quality and trying to, you know, squeeze out their margins.
Yeah.
And
pay $4 and
yeah,
$5 and do 5,000 of them a month.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, we had a lot of trouble with different riders. You know, it was our fault because, you know, at the end of the day, we made that decision to, you know, pick someone who wasn't a fluent English speaker, and you're going to get back, you know, 99% of the time, something that isn't as good as a native speaker would write. So that was kind of the first, I think, that would be the main kind of problem, that if we were to go back and someone starting out doing it, you got to go with the quality, because everything these days is about quality content.
Yeah.
Google is no longer looking for just junk. They want long posts, or they want, like, you know, proper structure.
But they want stuff that people will interact with, and people won't interact with poorly written content.
Again,
so
it comes back down to the whole social media thing. Like, you know, they want to Google wants you to share this content. Again, it comes around to sharing on Facebook, Twitter, wherever. Everything needs to be kind of
quality,
yeah. So
and for people rather than search engines.
Yes,
yeah.
Well, I think people will share it quicker than search engines will.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. In some sort of
true,
way.
Yeah,
it does. So that's number one. Number two or three other mistakes you might have made along the way? Places you probably shouldn't have gone to?
Just trying to think that for places. I mean, we always, when we go somewhere, we always kind of make a decision, the two of us, that, apart from India, I think. That was all me. But I had to get it off the list. But we enjoyed it. But I don't think there's been any.
When you say we enjoyed it, was that a case of you enjoyed it and she endured it?
I forgot.
At times.
Yes,
yeah.
Of course. Yeah. I think it's very different for women.
Did you get Deli Belly?
No.
Never.
Not
never.
Really?
And
yes.
You know why?
Because you got the constitution of a horse.
With that too.
We didn't eat much street food. And everyone says,
I didn't eat any street food and I got struck down twice.
Really? I think that was the main thing. Everyone was saying, oh, you can't go to India not eat the street food. And I'm like, well, why can't we? I mean, you know, that doesn't, that's not going to deter the experience any different. Yeah, okay, you might have different...
It does. It saves you a lot of time in the bathroom.
That's it. I mean, we made that decision again that, you know, we don't need to eat the street food to have the same kind of experiences. You know, okay, we did hang around a lot of the markets and we did all that. We just didn't eat the food from the street stalls. It's not the same as in Thailand. As you know, the street food in Thailand is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I'm sure after a while your stomach would develop a bit of a... what's the word I'm looking for?
Immunity
yeah.
to food, and would be fine. But yeah, you will. I think you will get a serious dose of the Delhi belly.
I think we were just lucky.
I think
we
were lucky.
With me, it was being forgetful about brushing my teeth.
Oh, okay.
I actually, I can. With the first bout of it was a day and a half after I brushed my teeth from the tap for the first time.
Didn't do it the second time, I'd say.
No, it was about a month later on the other coast of India. I forgot about it completely.
Oh.
Actually, to be honest, I was a bit cocky and I thought, like the measles or whatever, I've had it, I can't get it again.
No.
Yeah. That's not true. You can definitely get it twice.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Yeah.
I like that too. We were just very careful with the tap water. We always use bottled water for our teeth and stuff.
Yeah. But then, like, there's other people then that will, you know, I think they're a little bit more immune to it and they have no problem eating street food and they never get sick. You know?
Yeah. Like, without getting too graphic for the listeners' point of view and for your own health issues, where we're sitting right now is about 3 meters from a bathroom. But there's two doors between here and there.
Okay.
So you wouldn't make it if it was that far with two doors.
Right, yeah.
So you had to be in bed,
yeah,
lying down, no activity, and doors open to the bathroom, which was not pleasant at the best times.
Yeah.
And you had to be this close. You had to be within like 3 or 4 seconds because you only had about 5 seconds.
Yeah, cause that's how quick,
you
know?
It and literally you would just go to bed and you'd lie there naked because you didn't have time to take your shorts off. So you had to just literally go for it. It was pretty horrific. It's horrific.
It sounds horrific.
It's horrific.
Yeah. And it's.
And I apologize for that.
Yeah, I mean, it is a horrific experience. And until you go through with an actual dose of diarrhea, worse than that.
Oh God! Do we really want this to go in this direction?
Try the same scenario on a bus that has no toilet and that won't stop. Because I had that experience going from La Paz to Uyuni to La Paz in Bolivia.
Do I want to know how you solved that problem? Out the window?
Endurance, basically.
Oh, really?
Mind control and all these other... Yeah, it was basically...
Oh, there's no control in this... There's no control in the Delhi belly that I have.
Well, fair enough. If that was the case, then yeah, you're gone. But I got it
like
the
last... You could paint the room.
2 hours. Vivid.
Yeah. 2 hours. Not even 2 hours. 30 seconds. I went to... there was one... It struck one day, right? And it had been from the lower end all the time. And I went to the bathroom at one point and I sat down and I got there in time and it was great. And then it came out the top as well.
Oh,
perfect. And it was projectile. And it was I tried to clean it up without the staff in the hotel seeing it because I was actually in a quite a nice hotel at that point. And I had to ring reception and say, I'm really sorry, but there's been a bit
accident.
Of an accident.
An explosion.
Yeah. And it, luckily, it exploded from the top end, not the bottom end.
Yeah.
So it wasn't quite as bad as it could have been, but it was pretty bad.
Stories from the
road.
It's
all part of it, yeah.
It is. Looking back, it's, you know.
I've forgotten about that, actually.
Yeah.
I'm cringing here, thinking about that poor guy that came in to clean the room. Oh. Anyway, let's move swiftly on from that. And this isn't going to make the edit anyway. It's going to be fine. I'll cut all this out. The third lesson that you probably picked up from the road, if you have one.
Is there anything?
It's probably very hard to put your finger on specific things.
Anything. Like,
in terms of, say, where you would have wasted money, not necessarily in the business, but in the lifestyle.
Yeah.
What was the biggest drain on your money, apart from, say, food and accommodation?
Over the past 2.5 years, I would say, you know, money, our accommodation and food, tours were. And I mean, there was a few tours we were like, oh, that was a waste of money. But that's what it is, you know. When you make the decisions to go on a 1 day, 2 day tour, whatever it is, you know, it is. You're getting some experience regardless. I wouldn't say it was a waste of money. I'd say that's just part of the story.
Yeah. Do you find a new value on money?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think you would have to. You know, when you see what can be achieved as well, and you go, okay, we can save X amount of money if we're, you know, shrewd about things, and you can put that to some use later on. You know, you need what you survive in your day to day, whatever, you know, it costs to live at home or when you're away. But you do try and place a bigger value now. We want to save more. We want to put something away so that eventually, when we do kind of want to maybe buy somewhere as an investment or somewhere to settle for a while, you know, we have that kind of money available to us without a mortgage, which is a big thing.
Okay. I finish the show off every week by asking a very simple question. And that is, what can the listeners of this show do for you?
I'd say it's just, you know, check us out on our website at nextstopwhoknows.com. You know, see our about page, kind of, you know, go through some of the posts we've written. We have a lot of travel content, but this year we're putting out a lot more lifestyle business content, because I think that will kind of, you know, give a rounded view of what we do, which is travel lifestyle. So I think it would be check us out on our
blog. And
I think
because we're two people that had no online or work and online experience, and we just kind of started from the ground up, I think we do have a lot of valuable information and experiences that we've gone through that we can share with people. So just to check out the blog, and we'll be blogging a lot more about
if they want to email us, info@nextstopwhoknows.com as well. Like, we get emails every week from, you know, readers that want to
people who want to do what we
ask a certain question, or you know give some kind of encouragement or something like that. We're more than happy, like, because I mean, at the end of the day, like, we get as much value out as that, helping other people, as others maybe see us as a kind of a some sort of inspiration. So it's kind of works both ways.
Okay, well, listen, thank you very much to this week's guests, two better than one, always better than one, to Florence Murphy and Carlo Cortero, or commonly known as nextstopwhoknows.com, the travel blog and content creation industry in itself. Congratulations on your achievements over the last 2.5 years. Absolute pleasure to have you on the show this week, and looking forward to keeping tabs on you over the next few months.
Thanks
so much, Bradley. Thanks for having us.
Great being on the show. Thank you.